مارك السهابة The Voice of أهل السنة والجماعة.
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. Once again أهلا وسهلا ومرحبا بكم to this edition of Truthful Connection, coming to you live and exclusively from the studios of Markaz Sahaba Online, Sawt Ahli Sunnah Wal Jama'ah, the voice of the Ahli Sunnah Wal Jama'ah in Durban, South Africa. We will now, inshallah, get into that segment which we call Parliament Talk, and our guest every Sunday morning is the Honorable Ahmad Manzoor Sheikh Imam, who was a former member of the NFP, but now he is the president of the Allied Movement for Change, AM4C, a registered political party in the Republic of South Africa since 2013. So he is presently the president of this new political movement. Well, not new, it was registered in 2013, but it's the first time that they are contesting both nationally and provincially. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, Brother Ahmad Manzoor.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh from a very beautiful but cold city of Cape Town.
Now, before we get into it, I think it's appropriate that you introduce this party, Allied Movement for Change.
Well, yes, indeed. Allied Movement for Change is a political party that was registered in 2013 and had not contested provincially and nationally previously. And, you know, with the difficulties that have been taking place in the NFP, a party that I originally formed with my former leader who has subsequently died, you know, and the great difficulties, of course, in the party, one of them being racism, but, you know, predominantly a black Zulu-speaking party, you know, and if you remember that there are factions in the party, they continue fighting, going to court and things. So, you know, there's been a call for me to rather have a different platform rather than a party that is not progressive. And as such, you know, the opportunity arose with the AM4C. The former leader was wanting to go into retirement. His children are abroad. We've had discussions and deliberations on the matter. And so I thought, well, instead of rather registering a new party, then perhaps maybe it's time that I took over this. And alhamdulillah, I have managed to do that. I'm now the president and leader of the party. And we've got some.
Okay, let us look at issues that are affecting the people of South Africa. And on top of the list is crime and corruption. What would AM4C do to address crime and corruption?
Well, you know, I think there's a misconception as to how we can deal with the issue of corruption. You cannot deal with the issue of corruption by deploying more and more police officers. We need to get to the root cause, and the root cause is the socioeconomic conditions under which the contributing factors to the high levels of crime. And that's what we want to deal with, and that's what I've been raising. And of course, to some extent, even empowering communities so that they could be productive and get back their dignity. And one of the ways, in fact, I can tell you, the criminal justice system is not working. You need to give more powers to the police and the defense force to work together in, like many other countries, to root out crime and corruption. That's the first thing. Secondly, and very importantly, what are the contributing factors to the high levels of crime? In terms of the latest statistics, a lot of this crime comes from the taverns and shebeens and things that we have in the area. The high levels of unemployment, almost 70% of youth in the country is unemployment. And that's now linked to economic growth. If you don't boost economic growth, it's going to get progressively worse over a period of time. You know, the living conditions in which people are actually living. If you look at the housing facilities that exist for these people, the shacks that you have all over, the teenage pregnancy. So what we are saying is that you start from a grassroots level to create a better society, right from school level, you deploy safety ambassadors to identify learners that will have difficulty or problems or come from dysfunctional families. Together with social workers in those communities, you work together with them. But if we're expecting police to deal with it, it's never going to happen, even if you put a million police officers on the street. So we believe that now on the issue of the corruption itself, it's common knowledge that businesses, and I want to tell you this, my brother, you will be shocked if you look at, if you really establish or the seriousness of the levels of corruption in the country. South Africa has resources. It has enough financial resources. Unfortunately, those resources are going to just a handful of people. That is why South Africa produced 17,500 black millionaires and multimillionaires in the last couple of years. Where does this corruption come from? First of all, it's the value for money. All these procurements should and must be taken away from politicians. Politicians should have and must not have anything to do with procurement. When I say procurement, I'm talking about the entire supply chain process of tendering and things like that. Because this is how political parties sustain themselves. Remember, many people say that corruption is in the public sector. No, I don't agree with them. You know, where there's a corrupter, there has to be a corruptee. And so the private sector is very much involved in the high levels of corruption. And that is what we need to do. So we've given measures and we've put in place mechanisms that we believe. I'll give you one simple example. Every local government, we start there, where tenders are being procured. We said every month on the notice board in the local community newspapers, advertise every tender that was already awarded and ought to have been advertised before it was awarded. Now, after you've awarded, put it up there on the notice board. Who have you issued? Who's the directors of this company? What is the value? What is the itemized billing? To see whether you're paying 10 rand for an item that costs 10 rand or you're paying 100 rand. Right now, you're paying 100 rand for an item that costs 10 rand. So as a result of that, if you look at the amount of money that goes to our administration, and then coupled with that, with the way you're not getting value for money, there's hardly any money to deliver services. That is why the state of local government is deteriorating to the extent it is. So if you want to stop corruption, start right from local government election. But very importantly, keep politicians completely out of procurement. But add to that, if you can only have an independent body that can be responsible for identifying people fit for purpose in placing them in employment or deploying them, and take that away from politicians. So those two things, you couple them together, I can tell you, will reduce the levels of corruption. And it might not eradicate it completely, but it will drastically reduce it to the extent that, you know, you'll be able to identify those that are part of the corrupt practices in the country. But again, I want to say, as far as the levels of crime, you know, in policing, we have said very clearly, let's recruit those that are passionate about becoming police officers. Let it be part of the curriculum of basic education. Not advertise for police officer trainees after grade 12, because anybody and everybody that is unemployed will apply for those jobs. And it, as a result, they are not committed and dedicated. So you're not solving the problem. But like I say, by getting the right kind of police officers and recruited, but more importantly, dealing with the root causes of the crime. If you're not going to create jobs in South Africa and youth are hanging around the street unemployed during the day and a drug dealer goes past, is 9 out of 10 going to recruit you to be one of his runners, whether we like it or not? So, you know, it needs a holistic approach, and we have a plan as far as that is concerned. Every police commissioner that we visited in every province in the country are raising the same complaints about the taverns and shebeens and the availability of firearms and, you know, things of nature. And then more importantly, if you look at the police officers in the country, just look at what they get paid. 13 rand a danger allowance they have. 31 years, now it's gone up to 23 rand a day. Can you imagine the moment you put on that uniform, your life is in danger? They are living in shacks. It never happened before. These people living on the way home or coming to work, they are being murdered. The guns are being stolen. You know, their firearms. So I think we need a holistic approach, and we have a plan that is concerned, and some grassroots to be able to establish. If you don't save the child while the child is at school, you can be rest assured 9 out of 10 times the child is going to end up and become a criminal. The child has got no options. There's no jobs. The mothers are working. You know, the statistics says that 78% of black children do not have a father at home. Can you imagine? And we're expecting these children to grow up, you know, in a good environment. It's not going to happen. So we need a holistic approach. And the other problem we've got is police officers are making arrests. Courts are throwing these things out because they are inundated with, you know, on the rolls of cases after cases after cases. They can't cope.
Now, the second question, how would you address economic growth and high unemployment?
Well, let me say this first of all. So we are the root cause of why we are where we are. Your manufacturing sector is at a standstill. With some of the most arable land in the continent and in the world, we are not making ultimate use of it. You know, your agricultural sector can create so many jobs, but also small-scale, you know, farmers, but it's not actually happening. If you look at South Africa and the land that it has, I'll give you a good example. If you take the Eastern Cape, Western Cape borders, some of the most arable land, most fertile land. Can you imagine that South Africa is importing fruit, vegetable, when we could be exporting? Wheat is one good example. Maize, can you imagine? Maize, we are importing sugar. And you know, and I know, South Africa was well known for its sugar plantation, you know, for days of the arrival of the Indians and worked on the sugarcane farms. But we are importing sugar as well. The question is why? Why is it that the manufacturing sector, which is where most of your jobs should be created? We manufactured our own cars in South Africa at that time. We don't anymore. Your leather industry has come to a standstill. Your textile industry has come to a standstill. Your plastic industry has come to a standstill. Most, or even your toilet paper, toothpicks, and everything are being imported into the country. Yet we have forestries, we have fisheries, we have everything in South Africa. Now, why are we relying on imports? Why can we not give incentives to small businesses rather than the stringent labor conditions which makes it impossible for them to survive? And that is what many countries are doing. South Africa has the capacity to manufacture, and not only for local consumption, but for export. And that's one of the things the Allied Movement for Change is saying. No, we need to enhance those manufacturing industries and bring them back. Let's give them incentives. Let's also give incentives to all the rural areas. And so businesses can flourish in those areas, which will prevent breadwinners leaving those rural areas and going and working in the urban areas, because that creates a dysfunctional society. Now, if we can deal with particularly the manufacturing industry and the agricultural sector, including the marine life that we have at the moment is dominated by large-scale fishing companies, foreign companies, rather than the locals. What we are doing right now is, if you look at the small-scale fishing, particularly the Western Cape, the West Coast, and all those areas, is being dominated by the large-scale fishing, which, despite the fact that these small-scale fishing, that we've seen them even in KwaZulu-Natal, they only know this industry. They survive. This is bread and butter for them. But yet we are giving them through to large-scale fishing companies. We say, no, let's get our people more involved as far as the marine life is concerned, in the fishing sector, in the agricultural sector. You know, I've given a suggestion to the former deputy president, which he was very happy about it, but unfortunately he left. How you can, and I gave you one good example, how you can take 50 people from 50 homes, give them pieces of land close to where they live, let them grow the wheat, have a mill to mill that thing into flour, have have a bakery at the correctional facilities not far from them. Take the inmates and train them to be doing the baking, so when they are released from incarceration, they will be able to reincorporated into society, reintegrated into society. You can supply those bread and things to all your correctional facilities, hospitals, clinics, schools, in your feeding schemes at half the price, if not quarter of the price, to what you are paying right now. But it will be a win-win situation for everybody. But you need to be passionate about it. They need to be committed. And government just listens, agrees, and does absolutely nothing about it. Rural governments, my brother, totally on handouts from national government. No effort is being made whatsoever to become self-sufficient or semi-urbanize those areas. So what you're doing is what you had during the days of apartheid, the migration system. So the breadwinners all leave their rural towns, they go to the urban areas to go and work or into different provinces, come home once a year. What is the dysfunctional state of the system, their family life? This is the problems you're having.
Regarding the housing crisis, 3 million do not have homes, and this is increasing by 200,000 annually.
Well, you know, even the 200,000, in my view, is an underestimation, because there's over 1 million people being born every year in South Africa. Last year, 91,000 children gave birth to children. But now let me tell you, the point we're asking is it not correct? Is it not your right to be able to be housed? Food, clothing, shelter is a basic need of every human being. Now, we have enough land in South Africa. Yes, a lot of land is still owned by a handful of people. And yes, in terms of the land restitution process, we have been very slow undertaking being able to deal with that. There's no doubt about it. But what stops every local municipality in the country from identifying the land that is available, having a database of the people who live there, their own people that contribute to their rates and taxes, and taking that land and subdividing it right now as we speak to each other and handing it out and giving the dignity to these people? And then as and when you are able to provide the services on an annual basis, you do that. But can you imagine how much of economic growth you'll have out of that alone? Because once you gave people their dignity in giving them their piece of land, subdivided with their title deed, waiting for water and sanitation, I can assure you people will start building their own homes. They'll put up mansions without any assistance from government at all. Government does not have the capacity of building houses for people. And more importantly, let me tell you, when they're building these RDP houses, it's costing them 100,000+ rand to build one of those houses. And that is also what's promoting the high levels of, based on the socioeconomic conditions under which are people, high levels of teenage pregnancy, sexual assault and abuse, even among family members. But what would you do here? People will build decent homes for themselves over a period of time while you are supplying them with the basic services. But what we are failing to do is to address the inequalities of the past. Remember, a lot of our people were either removed from their homes and their land, and alternatively, many of them were sent to go and live in very rural areas with no basic services at all. But there is an opportunity to address that high levels of inequality. South Africa remains one of the most unequal societies. Give them that land in every municipality where they live, and then they will build their homes. So government does not have the responsibility of actually building homes for people. That's the first thing. The second problem, you got those RDP houses that you're building. There is no mechanisms in place to ensure that when you gave it to Mr. Gumede, Mr. Gumede has still got that house 10 years later. My brother, they're selling these houses for 10,000, 20,000, 25,000, 50,000. Bring it. This is the problem we got. Then they sell those houses and they go back there on the waiting list for more houses with another surname or another ID number. You understand? Or going to the informal settlement and expect you to get them houses again. This is what is happening, and I've repeatedly raised this with the Human Settlements Department. They just don't have, and where does it come from? The fact that you have not employed people that are fit for purpose, passionate about the kind of work they are doing. That is why we are saying have an independent body to employ people, so you can employ the right kind of people in the right kind of position, that they're not aligned to political parties, so that people can provide professional services. Now, can you imagine you gave 1 million people and 10% of that 1 million sold their houses after a few years, and you've got no track of it, and they're back on the waiting list or living in informal settlements. Or you gave them one house somewhere, and because there's no development in those rural areas, they are migrating, so now you must give them another house in the urban area. So the entire system needs a relook. And so we believe as the AM4C, it's very simple. Just to address the inequalities that exist today with 3 million people almost homeless, for once off, give every South African family that cannot afford a home, and I'm not talking about those that can, give them a piece of land, give them their dignity and their identity back. And I can tell you, you'll see the growth that we'll have in the country in a short space of time.
Looking at that great issue is education. We know that the standard of education is dropping every year. So, you know, how would you do something about this?
Yeah, I think the problem there is the emphasis in education in South Africa is on quantity and not on quality. Where are all these training colleges? That's what the AM4C is talking about. Let's reintroduce them. We need a system where even in schools, if you remember many years ago, there were inspectors that used to visit these schools. That's what we are talking about. The quality, that is where the emphasis must be on. 30% pass mark, we think, is not good enough. Where is it going to take you and what are you going to produce? The other problem is to keep children in school. Yes, we passed a bill recently. Is it being complied with? No, there's no compliance. There's no oversight over it. A child should remain in a school until they are ready and you know, to be able to go into the either job market or into study further. But the problem we have in South Africa is that there's nothing in the schools, my brother, to attract children. You know, you need to ensure that sporting activities is part of a child's life from a very early stage. You need to ensure that the health services you provide at the school is of a high standard, so children will understand what is required when they become adults and get into society and be absorbed there. We don't have those things. If you go into some of these schools, the educators, particularly in the rural areas, you'll be shocked of the quality of education, how poor it is. The other problem you've got is that the schools are so far, the transport system that they provide, half the time they are not there on time to pick up the children, or they're not getting paid by government time, you see, and they're not able to do. So we are saying, let us improve the quality of education. If you improve the quality of education, you will produce the skills we need in this country. Right now, as I said, 1 out of 2 children who start school don't finish matric, and most of them drop out by grade 10. More importantly, those that make it, 60% of them drop out in the first year of TVET colleges. And go further than that, I can tell you, 30% of them that did math fail. So what are you left with? All these others are now expected to be absorbed by society. They can't get jobs. That is what's leading to the high levels of crime in South Africa. If you go around and look at most of these petty crimes, house breakings and things like that, are all being caused by those that are on the streets, either homeless or can't get jobs because they don't have the necessary skills. Your skills, your TVET colleges are not even talking to the skills needs of the country. The TVET college curriculum, my brother, is based on the availability of lecturers in their colleges rather than addressing the skills. Look at the amount of money you're spending on student financial aid, and yet you're not producing the skills. You want to import skills. And yet the rest of the skills that we have are leaving the country because there's no job opportunity. So we are saying, as far as education, let's put emphasis on quality, and that's what we will do. Ensure this quality, we'll ensure that school, in fact, will address children that are coming from dysfunctional home, will make sure that they taught and educated on how to live a healthy life, how to be involved in sporting activities, arts and culture. When you come to sporting activities, not every child wants to become a doctor or a lawyer or a teacher. But what about those that can earn a living out of sports? Can you imagine 62 million people? It's hardly possible for South Africa to win a football match or a cricket match anymore. Where are we heading to? So we believe that the school should be a one-stop when it comes to health, to come to education, sporting activities and things. But very importantly, it's the school that's going to be able to save the children of today from becoming criminals and things of that nature and absorb them into a society where they will be responsible.
Inshallah, we will now, depart because our time is up. And we will, inshallah, continue with this discussion next Sunday. Our brother Ahmad Manzoor, Imam, thank you for your valuable time on this Sunday morning. Inshallah, we will talk again next Sunday morning.
Jazakallah, wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Marcus Sahaba, the voice of Ahl Sunnah wal Jamaah.